Journalist Bob Woodward, whose reporting during the Watergate scandal 40 years ago helped topple a presidency, spoke last night at Union College in Schenectady. Woodward's talk was entitled From Nixon to Obama, War Stories from the Reporting Trenches on Eight Presidents. As a young reporter for the Washington Post in 1972, he teamed with Carl Bernstein to uncover the Watergate scandal during the administration of President Richard Nixon. Their reporting led to Nixon's resignation in 1974 and the indictment and conviction of dozens of top Nixon administration officials. Woodward, who has shared in two Pulitzer Prizes, is the associate editor of the Washington Post. He has authored or co-authored 16 books, 12 of which have been nonfiction national bestsellers, including his latest, Obama's Wars. This interview was taped prior to his talk in the presidential suite of the Parker Inn, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Bob Woodward to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
When you go out and you speak in this talk entitled From Nixon to Obama, War Stories from the Reporting Trenches on Eight Presidents, what is the message you like to get out?
Well, I think it's an empirical approach. Each president was different. They had their good points and their troubles, and I tried to chart it. And I guess if there is a theme, it's that it's hard to find out what really goes on. That the effort, particularly in a White House, is to spin everything and put a political twist on it that's favorable to the president. But it is done with an intensity and commitment now that it makes it much more difficult for reporters, particularly those who have to file stories 3, 4, 5 times a day for the internet. If the White House or the CIA or the State Department or the mayor doesn't like what you have broadcast or what you have written, they just don't call you back. And so that gives the institutions and the power centers, particularly in government, much more leverage than I think they had in the old days.
Can we say that that is secrecy now? Is that what it is? Is it secrecy or is it protection of the office?
Well, it's both, and one lapses into the other often. People are just trying to protect their position politically, but if something is embarrassing or maybe even wrong, unethical, or even illegal, then the walls go up higher and thicker.
And for you as a reporter, you have been able often to break down those walls. And how much of that comes from experience, and how much of that is luck, and how much of it is actually knowing the situation and being able to put the pieces together?
Well, you don't know the situation. I think the differential is time. I can work for articles for the Washington Post for a series for months or even years on these books that I've done. I worked for a year or two, or in some cases longer. So you can go back and ask people not only what happened, do they have notes, do they have contemporaneous notes that were taken at the moment of a decision or discussion, are there documents? You can get one person's version, then somebody else's, and go back again. And sometimes for major decision points, I think I'll have 10 or 12 sources, some of them documentary sources.
Your last book, Obama's Wars, came out in 2010, 2 years into the Obama administration. We're now coming up on the 4-year mark. Assuming that you're working on something in regards to the administration, does the last book ever have an impact on what you get the next time around?
Well, I am doing a book on Obama's management and role in the economy, which will be out in the fall before the election. Yes, I think I was able in Obama's war to capture the story. They never argued with it. There were some things they didn't like one bit, including the fact that Obama asked for Afghan military options from the military, and they just gave him one. And he said, hey, guys, I asked for 3. And the military said to him, well, we think this is the best one. And, of course, that's exactly what presidents and leaders don't want. They don't want to get one option. They want choices. But I've been able to work on this book and get the information I need. Is I'm in the last phase of it, you come to the realization there's much you don't know, and you now know what to ask. And there are only so many more months of reporting left.
And without asking you what it is, of course, because I'm just more interested in the process, do you know what will make headlines now? This book will come out before the election. These books are always blockbusters. They come out with major headlines that dominate the news cycle for a long time. In your mind, do you know what that's going to be?
I have some idea. And what these books are, I mean, there are, as I say, excavations of what happened. And they are factual. And there are always things that they don't like. And, that's too bad. But there are also things they like. Obama is, I would argue now, he's been president for more than 3 years. He's still a mystery to lots of people. People are not sure who he is. They know what he does. They know what he says publicly. But there's much more complex Barack Obama beneath the surface.
Have you been surprised by the presidency and the sense of what was offered and what was hoped for in 2008 and where we are now in 2012?
Well, some things didn't happen. And, Obama would argue, and I think credibly argued, that he prevented a full depression after the economic crisis of 2008. George Bush, the Congress, the Federal Reserve in particular had a lot to do with that, but we didn't have a depression. But I don't think there are too many people who are going to go in the voting booth this fall and say, oh, I'm going to vote for Obama because we didn't fall off a cliff. The question is, what did he do for them? What is their evaluation of their economic condition, the economic condition of the country? And ultimately, it's a performance evaluation that people make on an incumbent president.
Is it essentially the old Ronald Reagan line of, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
That's part of it, but I also think it goes deeper, and people, kind of say, well, am I going to be better off? That's the real question. What about the future? And in all of the economic issues, the economy is better, but it is fragile. Our relations around the world and the world situation, the Middle East, Pakistan, Afghanistan, even Iraq, certainly North Korea, relations with the Russians, relations all around. It's a dangerous time.
Whenever I've spoken to you in the past and when I hear interviews with you, of course, so often it is discussed about the issues, which of course are very interesting. I want to talk to you a little bit about your writing and the language. Given that you were a beat reporter and you were working on issues and you were working on deadline, and now that deadline, as you mentioned earlier, you have time. You have that time. Does that make you a better writer? Do you look at those, when you were writing and in the language and picking words and being choosier than you would be otherwise?
Well, that's an interesting and provocative question. I think on the daily beat, you have to be much more straightforward, use very clear language. Hopefully in writing something that's longer or a book, you use complex language a little more, but still the answer is in a straightforward statement as often as possible. I think if you know the facts, and there is always You know, I did four books on Bush in his wars, and I, you know, the drama was there, not in the writing. The same with Obama. Obama inherited these wars and inherited this economic situation, and quite frankly, I think it's the job of reporters to do what an old editor at the Washington Post used to call accountability reporting. What did they say they would do, and what did they really do, and what is its meaning and consequence?
When you read the Washington Post, when you read the New York Times or the LA Times or other major city newspapers, are you proud of what you see?
I think there's a lot of great work in the newspapers. It's no secret, newspapers have much less money, so they have less staff. There's less of a commitment to this. I don't really call it investigative reporting. I call it in-depth reporting, digging in. And the fact that we have less of it is not good for this country or for the world.
You are appearing with Carl Bernstein a lot. It's the 40th anniversary. You're out. You're here in Schenectady solo, but there have been other dates where you've been together. Are those fun? Do you get to talk shop?
With Carl, my Watergate partner, sure, they are fun. And in doing this, we've been able to dig into some of the Nixon tapes, the record. They're still continuing controversies about who Nixon was and what Watergate was. And so it's like any event in history, you keep peeling the onion. We do it. We're going to write a long piece for the Washington Post that will come out on the 40th anniversary in a couple of months. And so we're still dissecting Watergate and Nixon, and I suspect we will the rest of our lives.
It's fascinating that you still have, it seems like you still have questions in your mind.
Sure, and the what pulses through the Nixon story and the Nixon scandals is why. Why did he use so many illegal and abusive means to retain power? What was in him? And the tapes show it. And the day Nixon resigned, in a sense, he answered that question, or part of it. Not fully, but part of it. And he, right before leaving, he had called his senior staff and friends and family to the East Room of the White House. And this was televised live. It was Nixon without a script. And he talked about his mother and his father, and there was something mournful about the whole thing. And then finally, at one point, he waved his arm like, I'm going to tell you why I called you here. Almost as, this is the lesson. And he said, always remember, others may hate you, but those who hate you don't win unless you hate them, and then you destroy yourself. Now think about that. Hate was the piston driving Nixon. He was wise enough on the last day of his presidency to realize it. He got it. But why so much hate when you really look around for any president? Even across party lines, there is an immense amount of hope and goodwill. And he could never find a way to convert that hope and goodwill to his own advantage. And he would sit around, as we know, from the literally thousands of hours of his secret tape recording, and plot and try to settle scores and use the power of the presidency as an instrument of revenge. And if there, in the Nixon story, there is so much illegality and abuse, but probably the real tragedy was the smallness, that he did not realize he had this power, which could have been used to do good. And he indeed did do some good things. But you listen to those tapes and the dog that never barks, to my knowledge, no one ever says, Nixon never says, what would be right, what would be good for the country, what's in the national interest. It was selfishly and tragically always about Nixon.
Did you ever think about the hate that was directed your way from him?
Sure. He in the David Frost interviews, he unleashed on Carl and myself and said that what we wrote was trash and that we were trash. I remember watching that at the time and just think, why does the former president of the United States have to think that way about, quite frankly, lowly reporters? This was years after he'd left. Why, you know, where was the equilibrium? Where was the sense of perspective? And when he said that, I realized he was still hating.
Bob Woodward, thanks so much for spending time with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you.
Also, special thanks to Chris Myers of the Parker Inn for providing a great room to do the interview in, and Philip Wyda of Union College for making it all happen. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.